Texas Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Sipora Katz was a young girl when her family fled their home in Poland to escape the Nazis. For almost 2 years, her family hid underneath a potato silo on a sympathetic farmer's land. Katz recently shared her story of survival as the keynote speaker for Viterbo University's 2014 Teaching the Holocaust workshop. I spoke with Sipora Katz before her speech at WKBT's studios in La Crosse. She talks about the day the Nazis descended upon her neighborhood.
In 1942, when I was 4 years old, my uncle Benjamin Feldman entered the town of Siemiatycz, where I was born, to his house and told his wife, my Aunt Libby, that she should dress all of the children in warm clothes because he heard from Jewish leaders in the ghetto that we lived for the past 8 months that the time is becoming very dangerous and we must run away. He told my aunt also to gather the rest of the immediate family living nearby in the ghetto to his house. When my father, Benjamin Fuchs, age 30, my mother, Shifra, 29, going on 30, and my grandfather and two aunts and me arrived, he told us we must leave right away. My mother refused to leave, being she was expecting my older sister, Bluma, age 7, to come back that same morning from visiting relatives in a nearby village. But she said she knew the area to the forest and she will follow us. My grandfather didn't want to come. He was very religious and he wanted to go to a synagogue to pray. And my two aunts decided to stay with friends in the ghetto because they said they know what's happening right now, but they don't know what their destiny will be. So my mother wrapped me in a blanket, hugged and kissed me, and handed me into my father's arms. That was the last time I saw my beautiful mother.
I'm wondering if you can talk a little more about your mother and your sister. What were they like?
Well, of course, I was only about four. All I remember, a beautiful face and a wonderful heart, always cheerful, singing and conducting normal life. As you know, you give everything you can for your children. And as you could see, when we had to run away, she thought of my older sister, Bluma, that was already going to school, to wait for her and come, which never happened.
And what was your sister like?
Sister was always, when she used to come from school with friends, I was able to come and interact with them in my own childhood way. But
just as any younger sister would.
Yes. But of course, as you know, I was so young. She went to school, I stayed home, and so there was not enough quality time that I wish I could have shared.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guest today is Sipora Katz, a Holocaust survivor who was the keynote speaker at Viterbo University's 2014 Teaching the Holocaust workshop. Katz's mother and sister were just two of the almost 1 million people who were killed at the Treblinka extermination camp during World War II. Katz continues her story about how her family eluded the Nazis during their escape.
So, me in my father's arms, my uncle and the four children ran out of the house. My uncle cut an opening in the fence surrounding the ghetto, and we all ran through deep into the forest that my uncle was very familiar with the area. As we were running, we heard gunshots, but miraculously nobody was hit. As you can see, I already at the age of 4 became the enemy of the Third Reich. Why else would I have to run on a November snowy morning? We ran, we saw other people running, and we kept on running deeper and deeper into the forest. As we were running, my uncle decided on the second day in the forest to make a place to rest for the family of 8. So he made us sit down deeper in the woods underneath a tree covered with leaves. As he looked up in the distance, he saw a light. And being very religious, he had a premonition that that was a symbol from God to follow that light to get help for the family. So he by himself followed that light and he arrived in a farmhouse. In the window he saw a woman sitting and knitting and weaving yarn. He did not recognize her, but he took a chance with his own life and knocked on the window. She stood up and crossed herself out of fear, but opened the window and asked him what he wanted. My uncle did divulge to her our predicament, and she did ask him to come into the house. As he was standing in the room, she asked her husband to come in, and that's where our miracle started. Uncle Ben recognized him as Dr. Luczynski, a Polish veterinarian that years before, during the Russian occupation, my uncle helped him. How? At that time, my uncle was a manager in a flour mill, and that same veterinarian came begging for flour to make bread for his own family during the bad Russian occupation. My uncle was the only manager in the flour mill that honored his wishes, and Dr. Luczynski remembered that. And he said, yes. He spoke to his wife, Anna, and they decided they will help us. He told my uncle, when it gets real dark, to go back to where we were hiding and bring us back. As you see, being he was the veterinarian, he knew when the German and Polish patrolmen make the rounds in the area. So he guided my uncle when would be a good time. So my uncle brought us back late at night to the farmhouse. Dr. and Mrs. Luczynski reminded their children never to divulge that they'll help us, because as you know, in 1942, a message was given that anyone that helps save Jewish life and are caught, not only the Jews will be killed, but also the non-Jews. So that's why he warned them not to share. Dr. and Mrs. Luchinsky decided to place us in their potato silo. It was close by to the farmhouse. When we entered the silo, it was a hole below ground, camouflaged with leaves, branches, and lumber. So nobody, unless they knew it was there, could not know about it. The silo was so small, and because of my four-year-old size, I was the only one that was able to stand. The rest had to be on their knees. It was dark in the silo, and all we did is hold hands, pray in Hebrew and Yiddish, and counted each day of our survival. It was so small that we had no place to lay, so we lay down next to each other like sardines in a can, one by the side of the other.
Could you see one another? When you were underneath the silo, could you see one another?
It was dark. The only thing we were able to see is through the camouflage branches, a little ray of sun or some snowflakes, but not enough light like I see you.
And you passed the day by praying with each other and
holding hands and counting each day. Bathing, never changing clothes. No one can imagine at my young age how I could cope day after day. There were no games to play, no bedtime stories, and no mother to hug you when you were hungry, in pain, or in fear. My father continuously kept on telling me not to cry and not to talk loud for the fear of being hurt. What a powerful message for a four-year-old to listen, but above all, follow that message.
I can't even imagine having the strength that, well, that your family had and being able to understand what you had to do to survive.
Exactly. It's unbelievable. We almost like going insane, you know. But what kept us strong, and it's so important, is my uncle continuous telling us, have hope. In Hebrew we say emunah, and be strong, because God will help us. And to me, I talk about my uncle like a gibor, meaning that's a Hebrew word, like the Rock of Gibraltar, real power, but always with hope.
You're listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCullum. I'm talking with Tzipporah Katz, who was the keynote speaker at Viterbo University's Teaching the Holocaust workshop March 20th and 21st. She's talking about how some of her family members survived the Holocaust by hiding under a potato silo on a Polish farm for nearly 2 years.
So my uncle and Mrs. Luchinsky decided that she will boil some potatoes and make some boiled water and color it like bouillon, the color yellow, And late at night, my uncle came out of the silo, went over by the farm where she was hiding it, and picked up the two pots and brought it back to the silo and divided it with us in very small portions because he didn't do it every day. So it had to last longer. My father, being very religious, studying to be a rabbi and a shochet, didn't want to use any of the liquid because he kept strict kosher laws. Even though my uncle told him that in Hebrew there is a saying to save one's life postpones everything. In Hebrew we say it, pikuach nefesh doche akol. But he did not want to follow it. The privation of never bathing, never changing clothes, we became ridden with lice and respiratory illness. My uncle, after 1 year of being in the silo, became very sick to the point that he could not even swallow a drop of water. Again, Dr. Luchinsky and his son became the wonderful people, the righteous among nations, to help. They came late at night, took my uncle out of the silo, and brought him back to the farmhouse where Dr. Luchinsky, with the knowledge of medicine, helped his medical problems. It took him 10 days to do it. During that time, my father prayed to God and said, "If you have to take any one of us, take me and not Uncle Ben, because if he dies, for sure we'll all be dead, because he was the leader of the group." When Uncle Ben got better after 10 days, 2 weeks later, my father died. He died in the silo, and being that it was dark and the ground at that time was frozen, they couldn't take him out to bury him. So he laid in the silo for 7 days. Me, at that time being 5 years old, and it's dark, didn't know that he was dead, and the family didn't want to tell me. So I thought that he was just so sick and couldn't answer me. So I laid right next to him, covered him and me with my blanket, and prayed to God to get better, not knowing that his skin was cold, but so was all of her skin. At the end of 7 days, Dr. Luchinsky and his son boiled water and poured it deeper in the forest by a tree and softened the ground. At the end of the 7 day, my uncle and Dr. Luchinsky took my father out and buried him underneath by a tree. My uncle put a sign by the tree and vowed, "If we survive, you'll come back to this place and bring my father remains back to our town Simjatich and rebury him in the Jewish cemetery under Jewish strict laws.
And what about your father? You talked about how he was a very religious man.
Yes, he was studying to be a rabbi, and a shochet is like performing the religious ritual slaughtering of chicken, like, you know, when people buy kosher meat. That's what he was studying. He was the most wonderful human being. In his own way, as sick as he was, hugging me and telling me not to cry and to be in quiet to save a life. A powerful message.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. I'm talking with Sipora Katz, who was the keynote speaker at Viterbo University's Teaching the Holocaust workshop this year. She's talking about how she survived the Holocaust by hiding under a potato silo on a Polish farm.
We endured this type of life, starving, pain, illness, and fear for 22 months and 3 days, when in 1944 we finally were liberated by the Russian soldiers. When we came out of the silo, nobody can believe seeing a little light and taking a breath of fresh air. We could not walk, especially my aunt and me. We were all swollen from starvation. The Russians were going to put us on a truck and take us to the Russian border, which by then my uncle remembered that he wanted to go back to our town, Simjatich. So the Russians gave him a little food and a little money. The food we could not eat, because after not eating for so long, anything you took, you just vomited. So they wished us good luck, and he thanked them. In the distance, he saw a Polish acquaintance with a horse and wagon, and begged this gentleman to drive us back to our town because we couldn't walk. The gentleman honored his wish and brought us back to Simjatich. My uncle gave him, as appreciation, a little bit of the money from the Russians. When we arrived to Simjatich, my home, my uncle's home, were all occupied by Polish people. And being so sick and fear, nobody reclaimed it. At that same time, we heard from Polish neighbors that knew all of our family that my mother, sister, aunts, uncles, grandparents, children, all ended up in Treblinka and guessed. Now I am a 6-year-old orphan. Yes, I did question God why. I said, why was I punished when I even didn't misbehave? But there was no answer. While in Simjatich for about 6 months, the Jewish agency, the Sochnut, helped us get stronger physically emotionally and spiritually. And then my uncle and his older son, Shlomo, went back to the place, the farm, where my father was buried. He found the sign, reclaimed my father's remains, brought him back to the Jewish cemetery, and reburied him, like promised, under strict Jewish laws. My aunt and me and the two boy cousins went to Israel, at that time Palestine. My uncle and two girl cousins went to Italy because there was a quota there. When we all arrived in Israel, Palestine at that time, I, from Poland, went to Romania, and from Romania, after 5 months, to Israel. I spent there 10 years, finished my grammar school and first 2 years of high school.
I'm wondering if you can talk a little more about your life once you arrived into the United States. Why is it that you ended up here?
Well, when my great uncle, Herman Bush from Chicago, found out I survived and everybody of my immediate perished, he wanted to give me a little more kindness and fulfillment because he was of means in Chicago and he could give me a further education. In the beginning, I didn't want to go because my aunt, uncle, and their children were like parents and sisters and brothers. But they all encouraged me to go. And I said, well, I can always come back, but I never did. But when I arrived in 1955 in United States, Chicago, I finished my last 2 years of high school advanced student. And then I decided to enter Cook County School of Nursing and become a nurse. I could have been a lawyer, a doctor, a CPA, a rabbi's wife, but no, I became a nurse to help all the sick ones physically, emotionally, and spiritually the way I was helped to survive. Later on, I became a director of nurses in a geriatric center to take care of the elderly with all their needs because I did not have the opportunity to care for my parents or all the other elderly people that perished in the Holocaust in a world devoid of any human rights.
And you eventually
got
your
married.
Husband. Can you tell us about your husband?
My husband, I'm proud to say, he's 10 years older than me. He's an artist, portrait painter, and restorer of old art. He is a very good historian. And we have my daughter, thank God, Simona. And my daughter, I'm proud to say, she is a professor teaching online, financial and everything. And then I have proudly two grandsons, my pride and joy, 18 and 14 years young.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guest today is Holocaust survivor Sipporah Katz, who was the keynote speaker at Viterbo University's 2014 Teaching the Holocaust workshop. The next question comes from WKBT's Mark McPherson.
How important do you think it is to share this story?
Forever. As long as God keeps me strong and alive. My mission is to do it and to educate everyone how to prevent future discrimination, bigotry, and hatred, regardless of one's race, religion, or sexual orientation in all ages. I basically feel the way God chose Moses to save the Jewish people from Egypt, he chose me, Tzipporah, as the advocate to stand up for all the human rights. Moses' wife in the Bible, she was Tzipporah too.
Obviously, we're getting to a point now where people with your story from that era are passing away.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
Correct.
What is your hope? There's going to be a point where there's no one left to tell this story.
Never. You know why? Because when I talk to the young generation, which I always do, mm-hmm. I indicate because they are the last generation to hear an actual survivor. It is incumbent upon them to share my presentation and other survivors from their generation and generation to come, as we say in Hebrew, lesaper midor ledor, generation to generation. I also emphasize to them that the Holocaust did not start with the gas chambers, but with bullying, physical and verbal abuse. Therefore, it's up to everyone to take a stand with me against bullying and be a positive, strong, proud individual to help others, because even one individual can make a difference. Our Talmud, the early Jewish laws, says that if one saves one life, it's although he saved a whole world. So I feel that if you take a stand with me and look for the principles of human right, there will be a domino effect and we'll do better in the world.
I mean, you talk about how religion was a big part of getting
yes.
through it. And you talked about how once you were liberated, you asked God why. Have you stayed religious throughout your life?
Yes, I do believe in God. And as far as hate, when I introduce myself, I mention to stand up against bigotry, hatred, and indifference. Therefore, I don't hate, but I'll never forgive and never forget. Why do I still believe in God? After being in the potato silo, Dr. Luchinsky's wife, Anna, came out with two buckets of porridge to feed the pigs in the farm. And as she was walking a little bit, she saw right by the potato silo, because it was a German policeman with a dog. She dropped the porridge to the ground. The dog ran toward the porridge, and she purposely fell like she fainted. The German officer that knew Dr. Luchinsky ran over, picked her up, and brought her into the farm bed. If that is not a miracle from God, I cannot tell you what it is, or I wouldn't be here to share it with you.
One of the things you said before is that you'll never forgive.
And never forget.
And I was wondering if forgiveness was a part of this.
Yes.
Why is it?
I know it sounds like a silly question, but why is it so hard to forgive?
Forgive that somebody, I'll eliminate hate, but not forgiveness and not forgetfulness, because the world must remember to never let it happen again.
Through all these years, and as you reflect on your experiences, how do you find peace within yourself?
Or within the world?
I find peace by giving out of myself and giving. If I see a needy physically, emotionally, I'm always there to help them. My struggles and obstacles made me become a stronger individual.
Tzipora Katz is a Holocaust survivor and was the keynote speaker at Viterbo University's 2014 Teaching the Holocaust workshop held March 20th and 21st. I spoke with her at WKBT's studios in La Crosse. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, learn about a program that guarantees all Viterbo University business students a paid internship. To hear audio archives of today's show or past episodes, visit our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. The future of internships is in question after a federal judge ruled last year that some unpaid internships are not legal. Viterbo University in La Crosse has started a program to ensure business students are paid for the internship work they do. Joining us to talk about the issue are Tom Kanothi, Dean of Viterbo University's Dahl School of Business, and Sarah Saluski, a senior at Viterbo from Wisconsin Rapids. She also has a paid internship with Gunderson Health System. Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis asked Tom Kanothi about the program Viterbo has started.
All of our students in all of our majors are required to do an internship during their time at Viterbo. About 70% of our students have historically been in paid internships, and this year we got a grant to help the other 30% to get some compensation for their internship work. So we've decided to move that into the future and say, starting next fall, we're going to guarantee that all of our business students have paid internship opportunities.
How does that work? Who pays them?
The internship sites themselves, the employer does.
What types of work are we talking about?
For example, they might be working with a nonprofit organization to create a social media campaign, or a local business that needs some help with a specific task, or different work in organizations.
And the length of time of the average internship?
Most of our internships run an entire semester, so 16 weeks. Then in the summer, it may be shorter but more hours per week.
Why the change?
We just found that we wanted to level the playing ground. So a lot of our students need to work and earn income during the school year to make ends meet. And we wanted to make sure that the playing ground was equal for all of our students so that a student wouldn't have to choose between working as a waitress or some type of job that wasn't part of their career plan instead of doing something like an internship that would get them ready for their career.
Sarah, as a senior who has been through the program, could you talk a little bit about what you've been through?
I had a year-long internship at Gunderson Health System, and it was paid. And there I got the valuable experience of working within the business field, working with so many different people within that business, networking, getting that real-life experience that I could come back and apply in the classroom with other students, too.
What area did you work in at Gunderson Health System?
I worked in the HR offices in organizational development, mainly within corporate learning. So I helped a lot with the educational videos that went out to nurses and CNAs, especially with the new hospital coming up.
So a year is a long time. Mm-hmm. Could you have done that if it wasn't paid?
No, there's no way I could have. It was easy to stay for the year because I was getting paid. I didn't have that stress of trying to have my finances and make ends meet.
Is that a traditional story that you hear a lot of, Tom?
That's exactly the thinking behind this internship. So students like Sarah wouldn't have to choose between having that great experience at Gunderson and doing something else with her time.
Sarah, what difference did getting paid for the work you did as opposed to doing it on a voluntary basis?
I guess you can say it does make you a little more motivated to stay longer and not necessarily work harder, but you know that you're kind of getting something extra out of what you're doing, not only just your experiences, but you're also getting that financial compensation.
I assume you have classmates and friends who have been through unpaid internships. Mm-hmm. Is that something you talk about with them? And
yes.
How is their experience different from yours?
Well, it's always funny when you say you have an internship, the first question everyone asks you is it paid? Are you getting paid for it? And so everyone's kind of jealous of the friends who have paid internships versus unpaid. I know some who worked long, long hours, put so much time in, and they didn't get anything out of it, and they struggled. Their parents had to help them financially. They couldn't do as much, or they had to get a night job to cover what they were doing during the day, both school and an unpaid internship.
Tom, you mentioned about 70% of the internships have traditionally been paid internships. Is it difficult getting employers who offer these internships to want to pay students?
Occasionally that'll be an issue, but after they've had a couple of Viterbo interns, they usually see the great value, and I think they think that $8 or $10 or something in that range is a bargain, and they see the value, and they're happy to have our students.
So it's often more than minimum wage that people are working for.
Yeah, I would say our average is somewhere between $8 and $12 an hour.
And what are the variety of businesses that Viterbo goes to on a regular basis to provide these internships?
Well, we have about 50 internship needs per year in the School of Business. And I would say we probably have 30 to 60 businesses that we consider internship partners that regularly take our interns, maybe not every year or every semester, but on a regular basis. Some of them take interns that stay longer than one semester. So many of the large employers and small employers in the La Crosse area, almost all of the nonprofit organizations have at least one internship possibility or sometimes more. Train Company has numerous internship sites, Mathy, LHI, Quick Trip, both the health facilities, most of the major employers in town.
How did the internship program work before this commitment, I guess, to funding all of the students? Is there going to be a difference between the way it works now?
We have already seen a much bigger interest on the student side in internships now that we've announced that they'll all be paid. But traditionally, because a student needed an internship as part of their curriculum at Viterbo, students would generally see our community engagement person sometime early in their junior year and then line something up. But it was often more difficult to line up and match the internship site's needs and our students' skills or interest areas.
Sarah's internship lasted a year, which I assume is not typical of most students. Is a year-long internship a good thing?
Yeah, many employers, especially if they're looking at the internship as a way of building a pool of talent for hiring later on full-time, often want an intern for several semesters so that they can expose them to different areas of their business and perhaps and usually give them, progressively responsible positions. So we have two employers that I can think of that like to have interns for not only a year, but you know, if they can get them for a couple years and really try them out, that's their preference.
And even hire them beyond that. You
know? Yeah. Many of our interns do end up working for the internship site, or they network with somebody at their internship site that leads them to working in another position.
Is that the way you viewed your internship?
Yes.
Hoping it would lead to a career with Gunderson, or
boy, always hope
word
for
of
that.
Mouth to another?
Yeah. Well, I think with all that networking that you get to do and however you present yourself and the work you do, that they did say that I'm more than welcome to come back and that they would probably have something for me. But to go back to the year-long internship thing, there were interns before me, actually, who had only a semester long or maybe a semester and a summer, so only 6 months maybe was their max. And we actually did like a study at the end, not exactly a study, but we all had to kind of report out. And listening to them, they all asked, they said that they would have loved it if they could have stayed longer. Because by the time you kind of get into the role of things, then you start really finding out how you can do and the people you can work with. And just that small amount of time isn't enough about how much benefit I got out of the year long.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio La Crosse. I'm John Davis. We're talking about the issue of paid internships in colleges. Viterbo's Dahl School of Business recently said it would ensure next fall that all students in their business program have a paid internship. This has been an issue on college campuses across the country after a federal judge ruled last year that not all unpaid internships are legal. And we're talking with Viterbo University senior Sarah Salewski, who had a paid internship, and Dahl School of Business Dean Tom Kanothi about the issue. Tom, I referenced to that legal issue a couple of times. Did that at all play into the direction that Viterbo is going in the school of business?
I would say it was really a non-factor, John, because that lawsuit really involved employers who were, instead of hiring people and paying and following the wage and hour laws and the benefits, they were really hiring people into interns for basically full-time employment positions. Our students are doing internships, you know, more like 9 or 12 hours per week. So, no, not really.
Because Viterbo is doing this in the school of business only, a big portion of students are still going to be unpaid interns. Is this kind of a case study of how it goes and the college could expand it beyond the school of business?
Yes, that's possible. The majority of internships offered at Viterbo University or through Viterbo are in the school of business. But we're looking at this as a pilot. Perhaps we would expand it, or Viterbo would expand it into other interns in other majors. But for this coming year, it'll just be our business majors.
How do you decide whether it's a good thing or not? What kind of study is going to be going on?
We've always sought feedback from both the students and the employing internship site, and we'll look at the comments and the interest level and see if we're having increased placements and increased satisfaction, and we'll see how it goes.
In general, your fellow classmates like this idea of being able to be paid?
Yes, I think everyone is really excited with this new opportunity. Both current students will be graduating this year, but for even students who are coming in, becoming freshmen, I think that would be something that would really interest them for when they become sophomores and juniors and start looking for these internships.
Okay. Is there anything else you want to add?
I would just add that, you know, one of the things we didn't talk about was the real benefit to our nonprofit community. Most of our unpaid internships were in the nonprofit sector, and now, and many of the nonprofits therefore couldn't get enough attention from enough students to get their work covered. And now the nonprofits will be able to have interns. We will pay the interns, and the interns will get the work done for the nonprofits that otherwise they couldn't afford. So I think it's going to be really good for especially our nonprofit community here in La Crosse.
So the grant will basically be able to pay those students. Is this a grant that can go on for a while?
Well, the grant that you're referencing is the Great Lakes Guarantee Corporation grant, and that will end at the end of August. And then the funding will be internal from Viterbo for the next few years.
Viterbo is prepared to do that. How much is that?
Well, it depends on how many we place, but we've set aside sufficient funding for it.
Tom Kanothi is Dean of the Dahl School of Business at Viterbo University. Sarah Salewski is a senior at Viterbo from Wisconsin Rapids. They've been talking with Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis about a program that ensures all business students at Viterbo will receive a paid internship this year and beyond. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.